Today, let's talk about affirmations, why they may not be working for you, how they could even hurt you, how affirmations could even cause a schizophrenic break. You know, not that an affirmation in itself will do that, but it is a contributing factor, and definitely the philosophy that informs affirmations, how we typically use them today, it definitely leads to schizophrenic breaks. And I'm not against affirmations. I would even say affirmatively, I affirm that affirmations can be helpful, and really it can be helpful in a way that not many other cognitive tools or self-help techniques can be helpful. But you need to approach it in the right way. You need to do it with the right context, especially with the right intention. Otherwise, probably just going to hurt yourself with them. So, you know, if you've been doing affirmations for the better part of your 20s, yet you're still on a futon eating Cheetos, then maybe you'll learn something here. First, just to go over an outline, we'll discuss affirmations, what they are. I'll give a few examples of affirmations that I took directly from several popular self-help YouTube channels. So, you know, if you're going to accuse me of a straw man argument here, save it. Like, I need a straw man to make myself look smart. My brain does that enough for me. Thank you very much. Then I'll talk about the problem with affirmations. What's the main problem with them? Then I'll go into schizophrenia, how that could be related to affirmations. And then we'll look at how to take these common affirmations and retool them, rework them into an affirmation that will be much more useful for you. And just a quick disclaimer here. This is a psychology channel. We talk mainly about psychology affirmations. I mean, maybe just to give you a hint at where this critique is going, affirmations, this is not psychology. This is philosophy. Right? Philosophy deals with truth. What is out there in external reality? That's what philosophy is. Psychology is how we relate with ourselves, so we can then relate with reality and see what's true. The point is that affirmations are about what's true. That's the etymology of affirmation. You affirm, you make firm in your mind what you know to be true. So, yeah, look, I mean, much of your philosophy does affect your psychology, of course, but this is mainly just about philosophy. So you probably heard about affirmations before. You may have your own affirmations. You write them out every morning. You recite them to yourself while you're looking at yourself in the mirror. And the idea is that you take something that isn't true. But if you repeat it over to yourself enough, if you do it with enough feeling, with enough intention, while visualizing the end result, then the affirmation, which isn't true, becomes true. The basic idea is your beliefs create your reality. When you change your beliefs, then your reality changes. Now, the more orthodox affirmation type of people will say that, no, your beliefs, your thoughts literally go out and impress themselves upon the substance of reality, the substance of the universe. I mean, people will use words like this. I think this is interesting words to use, how your thoughts, how your beliefs can impress themselves upon reality, which is the exact opposite of what Aristotle will say. We'll get to it. But that's like, you know, more orthodox affirmation people. Most people who do affirmations, I think, the reformed affirmation people, they'll say that, well, no, your thoughts don't go out and create reality for you, but your thoughts, your beliefs do affect your actions, and your actions then, in turn, affect reality. And that seems more reasonable, but it's just as wrong as the orthodox stance, and it could really be just as harmful. So a few examples of affirmations. One popular affirmation, or there's a popular affirmation around this, a popular theme of affirmations is about being confident. So if you are not confident, to become more confident, you repeat to yourself that I am confident. You visualize it. You get yourself emotionally revved up on that frequency of confidence. You do all that stuff. But it comes down to you repeating to yourself that you are confident, because you met a confident guy one time, right? And he had a belief deep in his subconscious that told him he was confident. So that's all you have to do is you just have to put that belief in your mind, and then you will be as confident as he is. Famously, there is a self-confidence formula in the self-help icon Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. I don't know if you hear that. There's some guys working on the house. Yeah, new office this week. I moved recently. I don't know if you guys can tell. Anyway, in Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, there's a self-confidence formula, and it's five paragraphs that he says you need to memorize and repeat to yourself. And if you repeat these words enough to yourself, then you will become confident. It gets brutal. I have some of it written out here. One part he says, I will devote 10 minutes daily to demanding of myself the development of self-confidence. I will demand of myself the development of self-confidence. Not anything about what self-confidence is and where it comes from. We'll get to it. And later he says in the affirmation, this is even worse, he says, I will eliminate hatred, envy, jealousy, selfishness, and cynicism by developing love for all humanity. Here's a guy who doesn't really know anything about psychology, right? I mean, this has the intellectual depth and nuance of those hate has no home here signs, you know, that your annoying neighbor leaves out in her front yard. And this is, of course, brought to you by the New Thought Movement, which became popular around the turn of the 20th century. I guess we got to specify that now. And they said that, and some of them even went as extreme to say that, you know what, if you just believe you're immortal, then you will live forever. In fact, the only reason why we die is because we believe that we're going to die one day. And I'm not saying Napoleon Hill thinks that. I'm not saying everybody in the affirmation, whatever self-help community thinks this. But when part of your community does think that, you really need to be able to differentiate what you say from what they say. You really need to understand what the difference is and how what you're saying is any different in principle. But, you know, you probably don't do that. You just say, oh, well, I just don't believe that. But anyways, this is all to say. You can tell what I'm going to be talking about schizophrenia later. A second example of an affirmation, or a popular theme of affirmation, is about women. You know, guys who don't do well with women, they would affirm that that women love me, or I am irresistible to women. And again, you know, you got to make yourself feel it and believe it. You know, really imagine women being in love with you, and it will begin to happen. And then as a third example, probably the most popular kind of affirmation is, you know, money affirmations. I am worth such and such amount of money, or I make $1 million per year. I have $1 million in the bank. You feel what it would be like to have that amount of money, and people use this verbiage all the time, and then money will be, you're like a magnet, and then money will be attracted to you. So what is the problem with affirmations? I was hinting at it pretty heavily there, if you couldn't tell. But like I said, you know, there's really nothing wrong with an affirmation in itself. Your thoughts do matter. Your thought process, your thinking, of course, matters. I was a philosophy major. You know, nobody thinks that thinking matters more than I think it matters. But what matters is the resolution at which those thoughts occur. What are you thinking about? Are you thinking about reality? Are you thinking about reality in a way that's useful to you, in a way that is meaningful to you? Or are you thinking about positive things for the sake of positivity and not thinking about negative things because reality doesn't matter anyway? Dude, bro, didn't you know that you create your own reality with your beliefs? Right? It's the same problem, right? Of course, thinking, if you can make yourself think in a certain way, then go ahead and do that. I would say that's technically, again, not psychology, though it definitely will affect your psychology. It's technically not psychology, but go ahead and do that. But how about you think thoughts that are true, that, as Aristotle would say, conform to reality? It's the same thing with facing your fears or exposure therapy. You know, as we say at this channel, if facing your fears worked, then it would have changed the world by now. But it hasn't changed the world by now. But cognitive behavioral therapists will repeat to you, as they repeated to me when I was at Fordham, which is a school that, you know, is heavily influenced by the CBT approach. They'll say, well, Mark, eventually to overcome a fear, you need to face it. There's no getting around that. And of course, I wouldn't disagree with that. But it's just like changing your thoughts and changing your actions. What matters is the resolution at which you take an action. Now, a lot of people think, oh, I'm afraid of spiders. And you can go through a progressive desensitization of spiders, and it will definitely help you for your trip to South America. But are you really afraid of spiders? Or are spiders a convenient projection for your fear? It just so happens to be the case that when humans, accumulate anxiety, very much I use that word accumulate specifically, when you accumulate anxiety, you're much more likely to project that, to become afraid of certain things like spiders as opposed to doorknobs. You're not really afraid of spiders. You don't come wired to be afraid of spiders. You don't come wired afraid of spiders. You do come wired to be afraid of spiders. There's interesting things called nodes. Look those up. It's pretty interesting. So, yeah, you can overcome your fear of spiders, but is that really what it's about? And look, I don't know who needs to hear this, but just because you think something doesn't make it true. It doesn't make it true about reality. This is the philosophy. This is the metaphysics of idealism. And you may believe it to some degree because a lot of people have repeated it to you, but just try to remove yourself from it for a few moments and consider how silly that notion is and how much you could potentially be hurting yourself if the task of thought is to conform to reality, not impress upon it. But yeah, metaphysical idealism, which is very much informs self-help, cognitive behavioral therapy, which is influenced by Stoicism. And Stoicism, of course, is influenced by Buddhism. And that's the first piece of Western thought to be influenced by the East. And it says that reality only exists because our minds have entered into it. Our minds create reality. Now, reality may exist out there in some way, but it's not meaningful to us. It's not in any way that we can see and perceive. Our mind, it's a solipsistic worldview. Our mind goes out and creates this reality. Not that anybody really thinks this in itself. The reason why people develop these ideas is because the only perceptible alternative, which is materialism, is much worse, because materialism says, it concedes, yes, there is a reality, but it also says it is effectively chaos, it's unknowable, it's just molecules knocking into each other in the billiard table of life. We can't make sense out of it. So there is no such thing as truth or anything else that makes life worth living. There's no such thing as truth or morality or free will or love. All that stuff, right? You can't have that in a materialistic framework, so people concoct a metaphysics of idealism to deal with it. This philosophy is baked in. It's baked into Western thought. I highly recommend you read the book. I mentioned it before here, Madness and Modernism, by Lewis Sass, Dr. Lewis Sass. He's a psychiatrist, and he talks about the I'm going to talk about it in a bit here with schizophrenia, but he talks about the epistemology behind schizophrenia, and he rightly points out in this book that it comes down to Descartes and Kant as the two guys who solidify this idealistic reality doesn't really exist out there. Who's to say what's real anyway? This is my truth kind of metaphysics that is baked in to our culture right now. Which brings me to schizophrenia, which is a mental illness in which you cannot think about reality. Now, you may have heard it characterized as a thought disorder. That's true, but it's a thought disorder precisely because your thoughts, the conceptual thoughts, are not grounded in reality. As Sass puts it, it is conceptual thought detached from reality. Schizophrenics suffer from pathological abstraction. So if you ask them, hey, what's the similar between a shirt and a coat, they would say, well, they both exist in the universe, right? That's over abstraction. That's over generalization. It's, I think, in programming parlance, it would be over fitting. And when you cannot think in essentials, you cannot use concepts, words, and for what they are in essence, then your speech, your thought patterns, it becomes very, it's all over the place. It becomes very disordered. You know, so like a common schizophrenic symptom would be glossomania or clanging, which is when schizophrenics will use words not in a logical progression based on what the word is, rather based on how the word sounds. So an example would be, I'm walking to the shop, hop, slop, flip, flop. which seriously sounds like a poem by Allen Ginsberg. In fact, my friends got a interior decorator, designer, who organized their books by color. I'm thinking, that's what a schizophrenic would do. I mean, I understand that from a decorator's perspective, it is color, but just seems kind of kooky to me. So yeah, it's a preoccupation with the inner world, with your inner thought, your inner life, the subjective, the spiritual, at the expense of the external, at the expense of the objective. It's a retreat from reality. I mean, people say schizophrenia is marked by retreat from social relationships, which is true, but more fundamentally, it's an escape from reality because reality is fundamentally unknowable to you. It doesn't matter anyway. I mean, does this sound familiar? You know, creating concepts completely disconnected from reality. I hope this is ringing a bell of what we just talked about. And you know, something else that I just want to mention in passing while we're here is the question of, does weed cause schizophrenia? You know, I think we're going through a little bit of a cultural shift right now. And, you know, for most of your life, for most of my life, I've been told that, oh, you know, weed's fine. It's no big deal. You know, it grows in the ground. It's all natural, whatever. And we're finding out that, well, maybe that's not necessarily true. But now I think that the pendulum may be swinging a little bit too much, at least on certain parts of the internet. And people are demonizing weed a lot and they're saying it causes schizophrenia. And look, you can definitely link weed to schizophrenic breaks. Of course, you can do that. But is the weed the cause of the schizophrenic break, or is it just something that catalyzes a deeper schism in your mind that's going on? What I'm trying to communicate to you here, these ideas that have been baked into Western thought that reality doesn't really exist out there. You know, it's when you're undeveloped, maybe you spent your whole life on the internet, you know, and you don't have real relationships. Nobody's really taught you how to think properly, like how to think about reality. I mean, you ask, Mark, how do you know if your thought conforms to reality? I'm like, yeah, well, that's why we have things like philosophy and epistemology and deduction and induction and the scientific method, you know, not science TM, but that process of induction that leads to scientific conclusions and logic, you know, the process. What is the process that our thought goes through? You know, we have these tools to distinguish between what is a cognitive distortion and what is reality. But when you just do away with all that and your whole epistemology is positive good, negative bad, only good vibes, you tend to think like a crazy person. Your thinking becomes disconnected from reality. So yeah, I mean, does weed cause schizophrenia? No, it probably catalyzes. It probably catalyzes something deeper that's going on. You know, a young kid who's disconnected, doesn't know how to think, and he watches one too many YouTube videos on flat earth, he smokes too much weed, and he will lose track of what's reality. Now, when I smoke too much weed, not that I really do that anymore because I'm not 20, but when I smoke too much weed, I don't have a concern about that because I've thought through my thoughts and I know what reality is and I know what it isn't. And I have, you know, solid principles that, you know, you can argue with me about, but at least I have something, you know, I have some anchor in reality. You know, people say, even if they don't have a schizophrenic break, people will say, oh, well, you know, I smoke too much weed and I got really anxious. Weed gives me anxiety. No, it doesn't. You are anxious. Weed exposes the fact that you're anxious. And I'm not pro-drug. I'm not saying you have to go out and smoke weed to get in touch with your anxiety. I'm just making a more general point to put weed, schizophrenia, affirmations, to put all this in context to say, look, there are cultural forces that are huge right now. The cultural force is so big that you don't even see, and we need to correct what those are. And that's in part what I'm trying to do, at least through the lens of psychology and psychotherapy. So back to affirmations. This is all to say that the affirmation of I am confident is a bad affirmation. It's bad because it's wrong. It's not correct. You are, in fact, not confident. And I know that because you're repeating to yourself, I am confident, to make yourself more confident. A better approach to this affirmation, if you do want to talk to yourself in a healthy way, in a true way, it would be to construct thoughts that you can think, maybe about the nature of confidence itself. I mean, lots of things can give you confidence, but one thing in particular, from a psychological perspective, confidence is the ability you have to confront anxiety. That's all it is. It's not this positive feeling that you make yourself feel when you repeat, I am confident, over and over again, and you really believe that you're confident because some guy on the internet tells you that's all confidence is. It's simply the belief, except when you smoke too much weed and you realize, oh, that's all BS. And you have, you know, what our parents called a freak out. So what is a healthier way to look at confidence? Well, you could say, as I am more able to confront my anxiety. And, you know, I think knowledge, especially for young men, gaining knowledge is a key part of confidence too. You know, not about everything, but just it really helps to know a lot about something that's useful to other people. I think that's probably a key part of confidence. You know, whatever, there's probably 10 different things. So you could say, as I approach my anxiety and as I learn more about what I care about, I become more confident. It might help to make it more specific, like as I initiate difficult conversations with my boss and learn a lot about whatever epistemology, you know, psychology, then I become more confident. And that's 100% true. You know, you remind yourself of that when you feel like a dork and you're not trying to make yourself feel better. You're not trying to talk yourself up and say positive stuff about yourself. It's just saying what's true. You know, let me relate. Let me see what this confidence thing is and let me remind myself of what it is. Oh yeah, this girl didn't text me back. Confidence isn't having a girl text you back. Confidence is actually facing things like that over and over again. Yeah. Speaking of girls, let's go to the second affirmation, which is I am irresistible to women, or women love me. Again, the thing that's wrong here is that the affirmation is wrong. It's not true. Women don't love you. Why would you want all women to love you anyways? That's clearly you trying to cover up for some insecurity. For some women to love you, others have to hate you. Otherwise, you're just going to be disingenuous. You're going to be inauthentic, and you may get a woman in your life, but it's not going to be a woman who is a good situation for you. So what would be a more accurate, what would be a more useful, a more true affirmation that you can say with women? Well, what do women find irresistible? I mean, what are women attracted to? Maybe a guy who can communicate clearly and honestly. A guy who's authentic. So how about your affirmation be something like, as I learn to be authentic and clear about my intentions around women, I become more attractive to a woman who is a good situation for me. Okay, I get that's maybe kind of wordy. You might want to chop that up a little bit. But, you know, something to that effect. It's just right? We are affirming. We are making firm in your mind what is true. And we do this thing where, you know, a lot of our self-talk isn't true either, right? It's not true. It's self-criticism. It's beating our, you know, so we'll say stuff like, oh, I'm so behind all my peers, you know, which we don't know is true. You don't actually know that that's true. Maybe you're behind some ways, not in other ways. So then we think we have to come up with an equally grandiose, disconnected, delusional thought to compensate. And it's just going to give you the same problem. Affirmation is about reorienting your thoughts to reality. and that may involve learning something about reality, but your time is going to be spent a lot better there than some self-help guy who just says you have to visualize harder to make your affirmations come true. I mean, these people, to say something so stupid, they do not, I can't imagine how they would care about you to say something like that. Anyway, I don't want to get off on that whole thing, but so what's the third affirmation? Money affirmations. I am worth $1 million. I am worth a certain amount of money. Now, this one is probably a little bit more situation specific, because I don't know. I just think with money, there's more ways to skin a cat. But one way to go about making money is to solve a problem. If you want to make $1 million, one way to do that is to solve a problem that's worth $1 million. Now, it could be worth $1 million to one person. It could be worth $1 to 1 million people. So that's not even an affirmation. How about you just ask yourself, instead of affirming that you're worth $1 million, it's just so silly. How about you just ask yourself as an open-ended question, where is there a $1 million problem that I could solve? And I wouldn't say that to everybody, but honestly, if you're still watching this video at this point, you're probably not stupid. I'm sure. I am positive. In fact, there is a $1 million problem out there that you can solve and you can communicate to people. And the problem is when you're deluding yourself. You're deluding yourself into thinking that there's already $1 million in your bank and you already feel those feelings. You're out of touch, right? You're not in touch with reality. And you're not growing. And that's, one of these big issues with affirmations. Like, okay, so people will say, hey, Mark, what's wrong with trying to convince yourself that women find you irresistible? This is going to get you out around women more. And the more you're around women, the more likely something good will happen. Maybe. But the problem with I am irresistible to women or women love me is you're much more focused now on the woman's emotional reaction, because you put her emotional reaction above who you are. That's what your affirmation is, right? I am irresistible to women. Women love me. It's all about what woman's emotional response. So what happens when you go out and meet women and you don't get that emotional response? You actually feel worse about yourself. But well, your philosophy tells you that your beliefs create reality and your positive feelings create reality. So now you're going to retreat to make yourself feel those positive feelings again, which is fine. When you're growing, you're going to retreat. You're going to want to take some respite. But it gets very dangerous, very insidious when you have convinced yourself that the retreat is actually what you're supposed to be doing. And you become disconnected from reality and you're just, you're thinking about things. It's like the psychological version of clanging, just how you're approaching the issue. It's so inessential. It doesn't make any sense unless you're just trying to make yourself feel better, which, fine. Affirmations can make you feel better, but a good mood is not a healthy psychology. Okay. So, I was going to say something here about visualization, but I don't know. If you have any questions about that, just leave it in the comments. My big point about affirmations, though, is my similar point about microaggressions. Remember microaggressions? It was like a big thing 10 years ago. I don't think people are going to be talking about it much anymore because Trump's president. But it's the idea that, when you're a minority living in a majority white country, right? So you're black and all your white friends want to touch your hair because it feels different than their hair. And even though it's, done under the best intentions, it's othering you. It reminds you of your minority status. And this is in fact why black people are oppressed in a white supremacy society, because of, essentially the worst microaggression gets is a backhanded compliment. Like, oh, you talk really well for an Asian person, stuff like that. And I get that stuff is rude. But if we are to take a microaggression seriously, like it really does cause oppression, of course it doesn't. You can't prove that. But let's just say it did. Then wouldn't the idea, the concept of a microaggression be the biggest microaggression there is. Because basically what you're telling yourself is you just need a white person to give you a backhanded compliment, and now you're not going to make as much money as they are. I mean, nothing's more of a microaggression than that. And affirmations are about making yourself feel good and having this and being positive. But what does it tell you about health and positivity and growth when you are trying to make yourself feel good, do all those things in contrast with reality, not with it? You're telling yourself that reality is a scary thing out there that fundamentally needs to be avoided. And you're not going to win with reality. You're always going to lose that battle. And one could argue that's what the Old Testament was about. So, you know, that's the kind of therapy we do here. I would call it reality-oriented. We approach your emotions for exactly what they are. That's the idea behind therapy. You approach the emotion. When you can't approach something in life, you approach the emotion. You approach that psychological analog to a decision. An emotion is a psychological iteration of a decision. So you approach what that is psychologically, so then you're more able to, you approach the emotion for what it is, so you're more able to approach the issue out there. And what we've done is deconstruct emotions to their fundamental parts so we can approach each emotion, each feeling that you have for exactly what it is. You know, another great tool of cognition I was mentioning there besides logic and deduction and induction and all that stuff, philosophy, epistemology, is your feelings. Now, not that your feelings are always a correct representation of reality, but they can be when you understand what feelings are, when you know how to introspect properly. And that's, you know, part of what I want to help you with. So anyways, I do free consultations. Join animus.com/schedule. Thanks for watching. I did a similar video on this about exposure therapy and how, yeah, at a certain point, you do need to change your action, like with affirmations. At a certain point, you need to change your thought. But what do you change your action about? What do you change your thought about? I made a similar point about exposure therapy. I'll leave that video there for you to check out. And I wish you all the pain and misery that you need to feel to grow, and the way that you guys need to grow. And I'll see you there.